Welcome to the Urban Complex, a system of interrelated, emotion-charged ideas, feelings, memories, and impulses. This name takes the definition and lays out what a listener should expect. A podcast where ideas, feelings, and memories collide, leading towards meaningful change. I'm co-host Chris Richardson. Please enjoy the journey with the Urban Complex. Smarter cities for a stronger tomorrow.
All opinions by Chris Richardson, Dominic Papa, and podcast guests are solely their own opinions and do not reflect the opinions of Arizona State University or the Arizona Commerce Authority. Any endorsement of or messages from sponsors are solely supporting the production of this podcast. There is no relationship further than podcast purposes with any sponsor unless separately created with another entity.
All right, Dom, here we are again. What's top of mind for you today?
Hey, Chris, another week. Excited to be here. Man, I don't know. I just can't help but think about the Phoenix Suns right now. I mean, it's a great time to be a Phoenix Suns fan. I think
sports in general, right?
Yeah, true. It's very true, actually. It's been, for me at least, in my interest. I mean, it's been 11 years since the Suns are in the playoffs. We're rallying the Valley. You know, we beat the Lakers in the first round. Second round is going well. Just exciting to see the stadiums full of fans again, the excitement that it generates. I mean, watching the U.S. play Mexico on, you know, a couple Sundays ago was exciting.
Thriller.
Huge win in the most dramatic fashion. But that passion, the excitement you get, it's good to see sports coming back to life, fans able to come back safely into these arenas. You know, it's just an exciting time.
I like how you phrase it. Suns are currently doing well. No jinx here. No jinx.
Oh, yeah.
But, well, you know, humans, we need something to look forward to. You know, it's been a rough year plus for many sports. Is that thing. Football's right around the corner. Yeah. I know at Arizona State, we're already planning on how football stadiums, how dense they're going to be. And it's looking really, you know, like high density. That's exciting. You're right on. Yeah. And boy, the Suns give me memories. I was a Seattle Supersonics fan. I'm still mad at Howard Schultz for kicking the Suns over. Seeing Kevin Durant kicking butt now is dagger too, because he got big with Oklahoma City when they first moved the Suns or the Sonics over.
Yeah.
Plus, Suns beat up on the Sonics back in the playoffs with hearing the round mound of sound. Barkley doing the post game. Oh my gosh, that reminds me of the Suns Sonics wars back in the day. Oh, but yeah, so I'm excited too. Sports are awesome. It just feels like things are getting back to normal. It's been fun doing this podcast throughout, but you know, we always talk about we got to be in person. Actually brings this perfect segue to this guest. We've met with Jen in person a few times, but you definitely know her better. Why don't you tell audience about Jen?
Jen Sanders. She's a phenomenal leader doing some terrific work with Dallas and now the broader North Texas region. You know, we've met through the kind of the smart city conference circuit. She runs a very similar organization in the Dallas Innovation Alliance as the nonprofit that we started here, the Institute for Digital Progress. So, you know, we've kind of really helped each other as we've kind of had to bootstrap our, you know, our nonprofits to really drive, you know, smart city, but now the evolution of smart cities to smart regions. And so we've been kind of mentors for each other in our growth and our maturity of going from smart cities to smart regions and, you know, now a smart state. And so she's been someone that I've worked very closely with and been able to, you know, bounce ideas, advice, knowledge off of her. And, you know, we're always looking for exciting ways to potentially collaborate across states. So I think this is going to be a really interesting conversation, especially in the frame of what's happening now with the federal stimulus, right? And cities needing to partner regionally with other cities, with other agencies to drive innovation at scale. And so I think this conversation of how do you go from a smart city to a regional approach is going to be very interesting for a lot of our audience. So I'm excited to have her on.
Yeah, me too. You know, one thing, I don't know Jen as well as you do, but I've always been impressed. She's one of those people, she's kind of deferential when in a large group setting. She's just always observing. But the few times I've seen her get the stage, my gosh, she is just on point. She knows exactly what she's done. She knows where she's going. So I'm excited to see how that is all evolved since the last time we've talked, because it has been year and a half, I think, since we've seen each other. So should we get her on?
Let's go. Yeah.
Support for this episode of The Urban Complex comes from Worldwide Technology.
What if we could connect people to new possibilities, turn thinking into a way forward, solve problems before they become a problem, and share the future with everyone? We can. At WWT, we connect businesses to technology to make the impossible possible, to reach better decisions faster, to accelerate progress. Together, let's make a new world happen.
Jen, how are you? Welcome to the Urban Complex.
I'm good. Thank you guys for having me. I love what you're doing here. I never miss an episode.
Thanks, yeah. Jen. It's great to see you.
Yeah, Chris and I are excited to have you on. You know, it's almost been too long. You know, such good friends. We're happy to have you on and tell a little bit about your story. So, you know, we're excited. You know, I know you so well. I think Chris knows you from our conference circuit days. But, you know, why don't you talk to our audience a little bit about your background? You know, what do you want our audience to know about you as an individual? Take your time. You know, we're going to get to your work with the Dallas Innovation Alliance and the North Texas Innovation Alliance in a little bit. But talk a little bit about your background, where you came from.
Yeah, no, happy to. So, you know, the moral of the initial story is I kind of learned about sustainability by osmosis. I was born in DC and my dad is a recovering federal employee, but working for EPA, I was joked that I didn't get Lunchables, you know, growing up. I couldn't have any of the things, no packaging. And I always felt like that was so unfair. That's so terrible when you're young. But you know, I really wasn't planning on going into sustainability, but my background is consulting. And so, you know, started to have a lot of clients in that economic development, sustainability, utilities, all that good stuff space. And it really just, you know, led me to the inevitable conclusion that that was going to be a huge piece of what I focus on. So the background function of the work that I did is really around, you know, strategic communications and change management. And that's really translated, you know, very well into the partnership structure and that integration that we do now.
Not to mention cities could use some change management in some ways, right? So helping them move across. Plus, by the way, stay tuned with your sustainability interests. Our guest, Ron Gonan, you're going to love. It's all about the waste-free world, and it probably will have dropped by the time this episode's out. So.
Oh, very good. I will tell you, you know, circular economy is one of my new nerd out areas where we're really trying to make a heavy push. But, you know, to your point, cities have a hard time obviously moving quickly. But I think some of it is, you know, no city comes to our organization and says, I have too much time and too much money, you know. And so, you know, however we can shorten the bandwidth necessary to get the right people in the room to know what needs to be done and just facilitate is really one of the functions and the value we try and bring.
I love it. Well, thanks for the background. It's interesting. As we talk to more and more smart city leaders in the space, it seems that a lot do come from that management consulting background. And so maybe it's a trend there. We try to, you know, provide the advice for leaders looking to start smart city plans. And so maybe one of the ideal positions is a management consultant. So that's great. So Jen, before we jump into the organizations that you're helping to lead, you know, a kind of running joke now that Chris and I are doing on the podcast is asking our guests what their view of a smart city is. Because I think, as we all know, you know, no one can define it. There is no real definitions. But it's been interesting to see from the different guests and their different backgrounds how they approach smart cities and what they think a smart city is to them. So please provide us with kind of your definition of what a smart city is. And maybe give us a little bit of what you see is working and what's not working before we jump into the work you're leading.
Oh man, yeah. And you're totally right. You know, especially when this started, because one of the first definitions I think came from ICT and it was very focused on technology. And so when we started, I mean, it's a very holistic view. And I think everybody is understanding now that the technology is a catalyst, but it's not the starting point. You know, we always start with what's the problem we're trying to solve with a citizen focus. And the kind of the formal definition of how we talk about smart cities is a smart city lives at the intersection point between community data and technology to accomplish goals, be innovative, increase economic development and whatnot. But it's really, you know, community first. And then we find what are the tools that get us there as quickly as possible that didn't exist 20 years ago. You know, I mean, some of this is fewer block and tackling without, even without like business intelligence software or some of these data analytics pieces, it was just not going to work. And so now learning to use the tools, distinguish between methods, you know, it's a, that's a process.
Yeah. You're like, I'm taking furious notes here. I seen Dom doing too. Like you said something really interesting. Hopefully it wasn't completely off the cuff because I missed it. You said that, that your view lives at the intersection between the intersection point between data and what? Like it was
sure. Community, data, and technology.
There we go.
Those three areas.
Mm-hmm. I love it. I love that approach or that kind of viewpoint because you're right. The first definitions of smart cities, I don't think people or community was anywhere in those first definitions, right? Yeah. You almost had to be an engineer to understand what those first few definitions were. So
not to mention, Don, they were throwing the tech at it and didn't realize it was the data that it was generating that was the more valuable piece because they can maneuver around. And it's awesome.
Shiny object syndrome, you know, very much so. Yeah. And then you try and hamstring it, square peg in a round hole, and that there's a lot of cautionary tales, right?
Right. Well, that probably leads to the Dallas Innovation Alliance and the incredible work that, you know, you're leading now. So, you know, we brought you on because you're doing a lot of similar work around regional innovation, but let's not get there quite yet. I want to let the audience kind of hear your journey and how you've progressed to scale through your work. And so let's start with the Dallas Innovation Alliance. You know, what was the genesis? Why was it created? Give us a little bit of a background of what it is and what you're doing.
Yeah, you know, it really started with this kind of fascination as I saw the industries I was working with converging, you know, and how does that translate to a smart city, and really recognizing that Dallas has a unique need, and Phoenix is in the same position where there is so much rapid growth, there's so much strain on infrastructure. How do we get ahead of that to make sure that we're reaping the benefits and we're creating the best possible services? So my co-founder, Trey Bowles, and I went to former Mayor Rollins. We said, Dallas really needs to get on its game. You know, we really need to advance here. Are you on board? And he said, that sounds great. You know, report back and let me know how we get it done. And so working with other leadership at the city, it really became the concept of a freestanding nonprofit really mm-hmm. felt like the best way to go. And so getting everybody to the table, being able to work quickly, you know, in some cases we describe ourselves as an R&D arm for the city to move really fast, get those results and justify larger investments. And very, very excited, launched at the White House in 2015. And then through our living lab, which has 10 integrated projects in a 6-block corridor, you know, we were able to create the fastest to market, you know, smart city initiative in the country. So the Living Lab with its integrated projects, we, you know, matched it against 5 use cases that were aligned with 7 strategic plans the city had. So we really wanted to show, 1, the direct alignment, 2, how one project could accomplish 3 KPIs across department, which creates efficiency. But it ended up being the fastest to market smart cities initiative in the country. We went from that ideation to in the ground in about 10 months,
awesome.
Which you know, typically causes a jaw drop, you know, within cities. And so, you know, we work with cities all over the world to really understand. Yeah.
Now, Jen, for that specific, for the DIA, for the Dallas Innovation Alliance, and we'll use DIA, what really helped spur that fastest to market? Was it the executive level leadership from the mayor? Was it, you know, the nature of the community in Dallas wanting this? Like what helped you really, really accelerate that program? I mean, what is it that maybe other cities can look to help do replicate in their communities?
So, you know, the advice I was given by an initiative in Austin actually was, you know, you need an elected champion, you need an internal champion, and you need a community champion to really help drive this. And so making sure that we had that was obviously critically important. You know, we had previous relationships with organizations like the Dallas Regional Chamber of Commerce, DART, and some of these other critical pieces. And so we really were thrilled that they were open to coming to the table when nobody really understood what we were talking about. Yeah. And really we didn't either. You know, the joke is you build the plane while you're flying it when it's something really emerging. But Dallas, you know, they've always been super innovative. They don't always get recognized for it, but there's a real desire to be ahead of the curve and leverage all the Fortune 500 companies that are based here, the startup culture. And kind of to that point, it was really, really important to us that we not only worked with the AT&Ts and Toyotas and Ciscos, but we brought in local startups to be able to advance their mission, get to commercialization. So we really, really wanted to have that top down, bottom up from that side of the house.
Did you get funding from all three of those angles too? The cities as well as the partners? So I think that's key too, right? Having funds that you can navigate the process.
100%. No, that's a great question. And when we went to the city initially, we said, we will get through this pilot without any funding from y'all. So we're not going to ask for funding until value is proven out. So that was the way we did in Dallas. So our funding primarily came from nonprofits and foundations and the corporate sector for that initial, you know, what allowed me to leave my old day job and come over to DA and do it full time, doing both of those for an overlapping year. Nearly killed everybody, I think, you know, but it,
you're smiling, you're here today, you're smiling. So
all 100% worth it. Yeah. But it's funny. I think about that first year when Trey and I were in the trenches, just getting everything stood up. And I said, I don't remember how I did it. I don't know if I could do it again. You know, you kind of block it out, I think. You know, 100% worth it.
Yeah, it takes years off your life. I mean, Jen, I know, you know, we're very similar. We run very similar organizations. And I agree. I think that's a good point that I think our audience, especially maybe others in similar positions, to not miss out on. I mean, oftentimes, if you run to the city asking for money right away, they're just going to close the door and kind of shut you out. But if you can prove value and find ways, bootstrap ways to find value, you know, show success, then you can really start to engage them. I think on a much, much more deeper level, because they see you as a trusted friend almost. Like, oh, look, this organization didn't ask me for money, but yet they're providing value and capacity back to me and my organization. Let's find a way to deeply partner with them. So I feel like I also have years knocked off my life from those first years of straight hustling.
Oh man, it's a journey. And that's really a gift that we can give to other cities, because, you know, I feel very strongly that I want any city that comes after us to move faster, you know, and what can I provide to be able to just provide whatever I've learned and, you know, still constantly learning, which I kind of love. I joke, I'm getting a PhD on the ground, because every day something evolves and, you know, learning something.
Especially because I was going to joke when you said you're building the plane while you're flying it. I have a funny feeling you didn't even know it was a plane you were building. That's the thing. Like we're creating this thing. We don't exactly know what it is. And we'll see in 5 to 10 years. It's going to be amazing. But it's just that feeling of learning, trying, doing. I love that it started where, hey, we're not going to take a dime until we prove it. And that builds buy-in. And then you can do it even faster. It's awesome.
Well, and I'll tell you the one other thing, and this might have been even more compelling than not asking for money, is we said, we're going to try new things. If it works, you did it all, you know, you get all the credit. And if it doesn't work, I will fall on the sword. So really taking the risk out of it, you know, I think that was as compelling or maybe even more.
I love it. Yep. Take that risk for them. That's perfect. So, I mean, Jen, we could talk, we'll probably have to have you on again just to talk specifically about the DIA and the work you're doing. But, you know, we wanted to have you on to talk about how, you know, the smart city and the work in the DIA has kind of progressed to driving regional innovation, because as both of you and I are big, and Chris are passionate about kind of driving this sort of innovation and collaboration at scale. So let's talk now about you kind of your new initiative or what's you're working on now around the North Texas Innovation Alliance. Talk to us about that. How did it start? Well, how did it kind of scale from DIA and how is it structured?
No, 100%. I talk about the North Texas Innovation Alliance as the DIA on steroids, because we really found that the model of DIA was really proven out. So we didn't want to mess too much with the structure when we went to a regional level. And really from day one with the DIA, we knew it needed to go regional, state, et cetera, right? You know, and in Dallas-Fort Worth and North Texas area, the boundaries don't matter between cities, because people cross, I think 45% of the population crosses at least one county line every single day, and no resident cares that they cross that line. They want the traffic signals to work. They want to know that emergency responders can find them. So, you know, really, you know, a lot of it is how do we better serve our residents? But I think, you know, from the perspective of the structure, you know, we have 25 cities, agencies, counties involved. We're rolling in the private sector. Our university consortium is heavily involved. So the makeup, you know, is very similar. A big group that we're engaged with are economic development corporations. And I think, you know, often economic development is one of the, you know, the first areas that says, oh yeah, this is going to help us, you know, when we look at that economic development play and what prepares infrastructure to continue to elevate, you know, the offerings that that you're looking for to expand local and bring folks in. But ultimately, and I'll take a breath in a second, the regional initiative, what we're really looking to do is take on the really massive issues and how can we chip away at that. And by that, I mean policy, I mean financial models, I mean procurement, and really making sure that, you know, from a legal standpoint, I think it's so important that we bring in those folks early and make sure we know where their roadblocks are. You know, when are the points that they're going to say absolutely not, and how can we start to look at mitigating those early? So,
which when you have that stuff out of the way or at least aligned, you can move fast. It's amazing how folks just miss that there's super heavy lifting that's necessary. It kind of leads into our next question, which is perfect segue. What distinctions are there between building a city-based consortium to a regional one? And, you know, why is now the time? I mean, how's the approach benefit diverse stakeholders, priorities, expectations? Kind of show how this groundwork is, it's go time.
You know, I think for a number of reasons, and one is kind of, you know, similar to the case we made to Mayor Rollins when we started DIA, that infrastructure, you know, is taking a beating, you know, as more people come in, particularly for the older cities and for the newer cities that have the opportunity to build it right the first time. If you have a dig once policy, if you're going ahead and putting in connectivity with your traffic signals, putting direct fiber in when you're building and when those cities that are really high growth and the cities that know they're going to have that growth as kind of a bleed over from a rapidly growing suburb right now, they want to be as prepared as possible. And so I think when we look at the distinctions, when you have multiple public entities that are working together, they're all on a different continuum. They're at a different stage in maturity and how they're looking at this. And so we look at kind of this informal mentorship between the cities that have really established protocols, have got stuff in the ground to really help pull, you know, the smaller towns or, you know, those that are really looking to mitigate at the foundational level any barriers that will get them where they want to go. So one is really looking at where is everybody and how can we best, whether it's providing, you know, we're doing lightning talks on Thursday at our meeting, actually, around the digital infrastructure divide access conversation. And three of our members have done really innovative approaches to it over the last 1 to 3 years. And so, and they range from a 25,000 person town to a 1.3 million city. And so really looking at how they're getting things done and what we can all learn from them is a huge priority. So, you know, that's part of the example of what we're going to do.
One thing that'll be interesting. I remember we were trying to coordinate some work together and it was winter and you didn't even have heat. Like what did y'all learn from that? I mean, that when you talked about the infrastructure taking a meeting, and those are things for a long time. Like how is that either helping or like get focus or anything you share there? I know it's maybe a sensitive topic, but I bet it will have a major impact on what you're all doing.
100%. And I think that was one of the benefits of being able to convene this group, you know, reacting to the storm. And so what we looked to do in that discussion was say, you know, at the state level, that's a whole nother ballgame, right? In terms of what they plan to do around the larger infrastructure. But there are some things that at the local level, we can look at as a best practice or a learning. And a lot of that was in the response for residents. How are we getting the power back on? What type of generation capacity do we have or do we not have that now we know we need to beef up? So I think a lot of what we focused on is what can we control and what can we improve at the local level when severe weather comes into play? Because, you know, the freeze was, you know, unprecedented really, but we have a ton of tornadoes. We have a lot of big hailstorms. So there are a lot of, unfortunately, there's a lot of cases where flooding and damage and that precaution we can learn to approach together, you know, in a consistent way.
Yeah, that's a great point. It's like consistency in what's working and getting response. I'm sure they love that, your PR background you shared before. So I was also amazed when you were talking about some of the things you're doing, how focused you are on KPIs and whatnot. So tell us about like big audacious outcomes? Like what do you see as the big impact, and how do you quantify that?
So, and that's evolving, obviously. But when I think about what could come out of a regional initiative is one, how do you, to your point, some of it is about elevating the profile for what the good work that's being done. And I think that that's critical on a lot of levels. The second is, can we create cross-jurisdictional programs and standards that can be deployed that really showcase how can costs be shared? What type of interlocal agreements are necessary? What type, how can we create a template really for how you can get these multi-jurisdiction programs done and the efficiencies that come from that, both short and long term? So we're really looking at what type of agreements. It might be a P3. It could be specifically federal funding that's coming down, which obviously provides its own great opportunity, but navigating that particularly right now with the shifting guardrails, right, is something that we're all looking at.
Is there something you already see? Some of our audience may not think the same way you are in terms of this cross-jurisdictional approach. Like, what efficiency might there be? Spell that out a little bit. I think that's a really interesting topic.
Yeah. So I think, speaking to, residents crossing county lines constantly, if you can create a standard implementation or communications protocol between traffic signals would be an example. What connectivity is necessary for everyone to do that, and that might be new fiber infrastructure, right, where it doesn't exist. But if you can create that consistency operationally, it really provides benefit and efficiency. Congestion and traffic backups is mitigated or improved, and that leads to resident satisfaction, which is an ultimate goal, and also is a template for how do you create the common communication systems. And shared costs again, because when we look at, I'll stop, but when we look at, there's a small town that approached us years ago actually and said, we know we're about to get the bleed over of this growth because we're 7 miles from this massively expanding city. We don't know how to prepare for that. And we want to be prepared to absorb that growth and make the most of it. And so because they're smaller, they can't get the bids, they can't get the pricing responses that a larger city can get. So if they do projects together, it elevates smaller towns too and their ability to have bigger buying power at a cost that is at a scale that they wouldn't be able to put forward to the private sector.
Thanks for stressing that with a great detail. I know you referenced that project, a traffic signal project earlier, but I think that drives it home with the efficiency piece, because that is what this is all about. When you can make it easier, make things interoperable and better quality at the same time and cut costs. So who, for this type of approach, like who needs to be at the table? And as you help bring them, did you find anyone unexpected that you weren't predicting so that people can replicate what you're doing? The great work.
Yeah, no, 100%. So obviously bringing in agencies and counties alongside the cities is critical. So that's at a kind of a baseline. The roles that have been chosen within those cities to lead, to be the primary contact or attendee, it's been really fascinating who's been chosen, to be in that role within cities. We have a lot of city managers, CIOs, chief innovation officers, transportation leads, et cetera, and economic development. But there's a lot of strategic initiatives folks that got brought in day one. There's a lot of data analysts that come consistently because they really understand that has to be integrated into anything that we're doing. So that's one piece is the interesting, human that's put forward to lead strategically within those areas. But what we're looking at is how can we make sure EDCs are fully leveraged, special districts, with cities that really have, we want to work on downtown. We need the public improvement districts in the room. But what we're seeing is the need to and the desire to bring in the procurement folks and the council, the legal council, early. And there's a recognition that managing those pieces, how critical it is. And we really again want to look at a project end to end and say, where are the red lines? Where are the barriers that really work ahead of time to mitigate? So we really want to look end to end and where have these projects died in the past and create a
You mentioned quite a few folks. Is there anything that you may take for granted in how you've brought them together and how you get them to work together that might be something others can replicate? Meaning sometimes the secret sauce is how you get a large group convened, but more importantly, getting them to work together. Anything that comes to mind? I know that might, you know, you might take it for granted, but I think some put them all in a room and nothing happens, right?
I'm going to give me a second because hopefully my brain will get there. But I was really shocked by how many people came to the table with kind of a blind, you know, invitation for the initial convening. I think we had 30 or 35, you know, entities that showed up for that first meeting and they stayed. And but I do think, you know, some have shared that the precedent of the DIA and how that worked and how that was effective was, you know, was useful. And that was an attractive piece for them. But they also, I think, you know, the, you know, 5-10 years ago, people really didn't understand smart cities and what that meant, right? And I think cities at this point really have absorbed at least the function and the concept, right? And so I think, especially those that were trying to see what should that role look like in their cities, I just think the specialization of smart cities, even though we really look at it horizontally, is something that everyone is trying to advance. And getting folks to work together, there's commonalities. And we spent most of 2020 coming to a decision on what are the 6 areas we want to focus on. And I joke, it's, you know, we wanted to go from boiling the ocean to boiling the Great Lakes, you know, and now from an execution standpoint, we want to, you know, we're trying to get down to tributaries or, you know, whatever. But we know that we have a niche that we can carve out that hopefully will be a catalyst, you know, in broad progress, I guess.
Yeah, I, you know, Chris, I think to your point, that's what's so compelling about the Dallas Innovation Alliance or the North Texas Innovation Alliance or the connected, your point of you get people in the room and then nothing happens. Well, it takes some sort of outside entity to help move the ball down the field, right? Because cities are so limited staff, limited resources that they're so worried about keeping the lights on day to day. They don't have time to really sit down, focus and manage and plan for those big audacious outcomes. So they need an outside organization, an R&D department, as Jim mentioned earlier, or an innovation department to really help move projects forward that are looking at those big audacious goals. And so I think that's what's so beautiful about this kind of outside entity, whether it's a nonprofit, public-private partnership, that can act as this sort of pseudo R&D department or regional innovation office. Jenna, I have a question for you along those lines. I mean, do you know how many of your cities or organizations actually have a chief innovation officer or, you know, that's, you know, hired and, you know, as a part of the city? Because I know here we have zero. None of our cities have a chief innovation.
Really? So who, I'll kick that back to you just for a second. Yeah. So where typically does that role live then? Because that's something I can speak to.
I would say at the executive level, that's kind of the question I was looking for. Because I know a lot of departments might have like an innovation manager, but there's no kind of anyone at that kind of executive city management or right below level, department level that is kind of leading the charge. And so that's how the connective is really providing value, is that we're basically the chief innovation officer for the region. I was just curious.
I mean, Dom, we've seen it, what, 3 different ways so far from guests here. We had one where it was kind of the effective of the CIO plus innovation. We had one where it was, to Dom's point, a report of the city manager, but it was completely untethered to IT. And then we had one where it was a transportation department, where they created this Office of Extraordinary Innovation as a beacon that, hey, we need to blow up the previous concept of transportation. We have to really turn this on its head. So I don't know. We haven't seen a common model. Hopefully that gave you some time, but I don't know. What do you see in the region?
No, it's growing, you know. I mean, if I'm throwing out a guess here, it's probably, you know, 5 to 7 of the 30. Yeah. It may be a bit higher than that, but I will say, you know, the agencies, you know, have really embraced, or the independent. So the DFW Airport, for example, has an entire innovation department. The DART has brought in, you know, an innovation lead, and so a lot of the focus areas though are also different, you know, based on the use cases that entity is really dealing with. But what I would say is, you know, when we started DIA, we did a whole benchmarking report of now, you know, 10 US cities of different sizes and how they're approaching smart cities. And that really showed us how different the role landed in the org chart. So some became a combined role, kind of got rolled into the CTO or CIO. It became part of their scope. In some cases, it was under the chief financial officer because there was such a focus on process improvement. And sometimes it's freestanding, but it's always, you know, one of the functions is always for it to be cross-cutting, you know, and how do you really unite and connect dots internally to have that innovation, you know, be consistent and to find those efficiencies across departments. So again, it's growing, but it still typically falls under another function. Some fall directly under the city manager too, but then have a team that's still innovation focused.
Yeah, that's a great point. I'm sorry to put you on the spot there. I was just trying to get at, because, you know, it's hard for a city to hire, a full-time person, pay for benefits, where, you know, if you can't quite get to that level, you might be able to rely on organizations like North Texas Innovation Alliance or Dallas Innovation Alliance, right? Partnering can help you still drive an innovation agenda. I mean, especially, you know, Jen, I know you're interested in digital equity as well. Think about if they all have to hire a digital equity director now, right? It's very difficult to just hire these new positions where maybe the North Texas Innovation Alliance, South Innovation Alliance Connective can help drive a regional equity initiative on and behalf for these cities, right? So that way they don't have to continuously hire, you know, a new position to drive a new effort, right? Chief Resilience Officer, Chief Sustainability Officer, right? It starts to get expensive really fast. So
kind of an efficiency of its own, right? Where one serves many type of thing.
Totally. So sorry, just try to get that.
Totally. No problem at all. I mean, but I think we have had cities and so start talking about being an outsource innovation arm, you know, and providing that, you know, we have very deep knowledge in an area that most cities don't have time to think about to this level. So that education component, you know, those workshops, how do we provide that deep dive that would have taken 6 months for a mid-level person to dig into developing an RFP as an example. And that too, we could talk about procurement for an entire episode. We could talk about procurement, but you know, when we look at, you know, it would take a long time to really reform the process, you know, in a way that, you know, looking at that, but where we've talked about this entity really attacking procurement is how do we shorten that upfront time investment? How do we shorten the time of evaluation and taking less time because we have this level of clarity of what we want and what this needs to have. So that education is what comes into play. Where are there collective purchasing opportunities? Sometimes that's something that there's extra. I didn't realize Texas as a state has cross, you know, buying agreements with the surrounding states, you know? And so I'm like, oh my God, we could buy off of an Oklahoma contract. You know, it didn't, so I'm learning constantly, but if we can educate everyone and get them to the requirements in their RFP, even that, I mean, that can save the equivalent of a year salary, you know, for someone internally, so.
Yep, that's brilliant. Well, you know, I think we have a handful of other episodes we can have you on for now. So this is great. We're just developing content. I love it. But Jen, before we kind of wrap up here with our standard questions, you know, I'm leading the smart region effort here. You know, Chris in ASU is very heavily involved, you know, technically now smart state a little bit, not sure how that plays in, but you know, I'm all about cross collaboration. Chris is, you are. And so I have to ask, you know, where are the opportunities to potentially work together cross region, you know, between the Connective, you know, and in, you know, North Texas Innovation Alliance. Anything we might be able to collaborate on here?
Oh, there's another episode. Yeah. Sorry.
You didn't have me. Yeah. I was like, wait a second. No, I want to hear.
We'll talk about it now, but man, I think there's so much opportunity down the road, I know we've been talking for years about formalizing, you know, and whether or not it's comparative pilots, if we're taking a tactic on the same area as y'all are, and how do we make sure that we're, you know, really aligned in how we're sharing results and different pieces. But kind of the immediate opportunity, I think, is through this call for revenue generating solutions for government, you know, proposal we put out on marketplace.city last week. Okay. You know, the whole goal of a financial models working group for us is how do you know what the new opportunities are and creating new revenue streams for cities that will allow us to deploy innovative projects more quickly, fill any budget gaps that have come into play, et cetera. And so when we get that report and the analysis, I think there's such an opportunity for our organizations to work together to share those results, look at what makes sense, and really evaluate together. But I think I think all cities are looking at this. So we're hoping this will be kind of a baseline market landscape to know what we don't know, you know, how are other cities and regions? I'd love, you know, at some point to hear, how do you all define revenue? Yeah. You know, because some cities and data monetization, good Lord, I don't want to touch it today. That's such a mess. But, you know, some look at it as pure efficiency, right? Are they saving time? Are they saving money as additional revenue? But some say, how do we bring in more money, right? The hard dollars. So I find that different cities define revenue differently. So
yeah, completely. So you're saying there's your region, North Texas Innovation Alliance, has an open call to mm-hmm. outsiders, organizations for these kind of revenue generating solutions, just to provide this kind of market landscape.
Some tells me you're not just thinking like Florida, where you're going to sell driver's license information for revenue. So
Texas does that too. Yeah.
Okay.
They do. This is why we're getting a constant people that are very, very concerned that my car warranty is about to expire. I mean, I really appreciate the level of concern that comes into play and how they really want me to be safe. But anyway, but that's how they.
Yeah, but to Tom's point, anything that you're exploring?
Well, I think that's you. So you're saying there's an open call. So when does the open call wrap up?
July 16th is the deadline and when that ends. So we've got time. And what's interesting is some of the solutions that are already coming in, because kind of keeping up with the categorically, you know, vendors look at it very differently too. So we have some that are efficiency, some that are zero CapEx coming in, some that are, you know, I mean, I think it's going to be really fascinating to know what we don't know and be able to have that spur ideas of how you structure, you know, again, deployments. Yeah. It's going to be great.
Jen, I love this idea, because both of our smart region efforts here, the Connective and the Regional Partnering Center down in Southern Arizona, are both very, very interested in the same topic, right? Revenue generating solutions, mm-hmm. help bring in alternative, you know, streams of revenue to help drive these solutions. What if we were able to get the Connective in Southern Arizona Smart Region through the Regional Partnering Center to join the North Texas Innovation Alliance on this call and kind of agree to participate in the sharing of, sharing of solutions and what comes from that call, have kind of a three region partnership to explore, you know, the results of your open call. Is that something we might be able to formalize or agree to partner on?
Love it. Let's do it.
That's it.
Wait a second. Did it happen on the Urban Complex? Did I hear?
I think this is an opportunity. I mean, why not? I mean, all of our regions are looking at this. This could be a great way to, as you mentioned, kickstart this partnership between our regions.
100%. And I think it has the potential to be national, right? Because there are cities across the country that have reached out and said, can we see that when it's done? You know, can we find ways to utilize this information? I think it's a really incredible way to prepare for how we structure things. So I think what comes out of it is what feels most viable to the priorities of each of our regions, some of which we know are the same and are aligned. And should we, you know, how do we deeper dive into what a structure of that would look like? So I think we can all help each other share ideas and move more quickly in what that looks like, you know.
Well, Dom, as I hear Jen, like Deb Lamb and Smart Georgia come to mind. Yeah, like mm-hmm. very, very similar mindset. So
Peachtree Corner, yep. Colorado. I mean, there's a lot that I mm-hmm. think can join in this movement. So Jen, let's do it. Let's seal the partnership. Why don't we can maybe think about bringing the regions together to analyze the results, and then maybe the three regions have a public event where we talk about the results openly and discuss what we see might work, what doesn't work, and where we might have to pivot. You think that's something we could do?
I love it. Let's lock it down.
Awesome.
It's a no-brainer to me. Let's
You're hearing it here. We'll formalize this partnership and we'll get moving. Thanks, Jen. Appreciate that. That's exciting.
Yeah, I love it. And just so you know, listeners know, we've got an info session to dive deeper on the 15th, so next Tuesday. And that's at 1 p.m. And I'll provide all that for y'all to put in the description. But really an opportunity, and it's, you know, and it, I think, you know, for a lot, you know, the private sector has questions, I know, but we really want the public sector to listen in, and certainly, you know, to your point, you know, if we can formalize partnerships, but love for them to speak in as well. And, you know, what is the purpose of this and how does it align and be beneficial to them? So yeah, we're excited.
Let's do it. Excited to
dig it.
With that.
Hooray. Let's, yeah.
See, we move fast.
To Chris's point, got a scoop.
Yeah.
Urban Complex gets the exclusive rock and roll.
To that point, I mean, we've found a lot of our guests by asking our guests who they think we should have on. Is there anyone that you've been appreciative on your journey? And as you think of that, like, is there anyone that you think should be a guest of the Urban Complex? You were actually called out by two folks to get here. We referenced Deb. Yeah. She was called out a few times. So I don't know. Help us explore who we should have on. And also in the same way, like, we know you can't do it alone. Like, who's helped you in this journey?
Oh man. I mean, really so many, and you've had a lot of them on already. So I think, in terms of being additive, you know, there's some folks that I, you know, had, you know, followed with admiration and kind of nerding out for quite a while. And I think Brenna Berman, mm-hmm. the former CIO for Chicago, you know, really pioneered a lot of this and some similar models. And I think she would be great to come on. And I've certainly learned a great deal from her. My co-founder, Trey Bowles, really lives at the intersection of entrepreneurship, innovation, and the smart cities piece. So he's been developing an entire plan for Dallas around innovation and entrepreneurship. I think that cross-section is something that hasn't been kind of directly, you know, put on paper, you know, as an integrated strategy in many places. I think, you know, there's a lot there. You know, Amy Ossiker in Charlotte, I don't think has been on there yet, but Envision Charlotte is a model that we really learned a lot from when we were forming the DIA, and on it, I could go on and on, but those are three that come immediately to mind.
I'll tell you, Jen, when it worked and when Dom and I knew you were coming, we knew it was going to be great, but this was awesome. So with that, the Urban Complex gives a big note of thanks to today's guest, Jen Sanders, Executive Director of the Dallas Innovation Alliance, and it sounds like the North Texas Innovation Alliance as well. That was news to me. So thanks.
I've done it again to myself. Two full-time jobs at the same time. Well, Here we go.
Now it looks like cross-regional alliance coordinator as well. So thanks for taking that on.
I'll be the initiator, but we're gonna have to find something else.
Thanks.
No, I so appreciate being on. This has been fun.
You bet. Talk soon.
Cool. All right. Bye, guys.
Bye.
All right, Chris. That was Jen with the Dallas Innovation Alliance, now North Texas Innovation Alliance. What'd you think?
I always learn so much from Jen. Like I said, kicking this off, she just gave her the stage and she just knows this stuff deeply. Some things that resonated for me that I think are important to reiterate for those, no matter where they are in their journey. Yeah. I guess I'll start with what I heard her saying was when she started the DIA and took the risk of finding that, I think she said, an elected champion, an internal champion to cities, and an external community champion. When she was getting the buy-in from them, her pitch was, look, money will come. You can help us bring it, but I don't want to charge anything for this first thing we're going to accomplish together. And we're going to take the risk together. And her organization, if it didn't work, would fall on the sword, I think she even said. But she created this win-win. There was a zero way they wouldn't do it, right? They had a common vision of what they wanted to achieve, and they kind of didn't exactly know what it would be. But she didn't make them pay until after the value was proven. I think that process, when you can do that, builds the buy-in. And then later, when we were talking about who needs to be at the table and how do you get them to do, I think it's that mantra. She found ways to create what's called the blue ocean space, right? Ill-defined places that you know folks want to focus on and create this culture of curiosity, so to speak, where everyone's leaning in. And then she can kind of orchestrate how it's going to go so that everyone feels like it's theirs, yeah, and everyone wants to contribute. And then that's when you get the crazy stuff, like when the proverbial shit hits the fan, right? When they had their infrastructure problems, you hear what she said, like kind of on the spot, it's a touchy subject. They didn't focus on what they can't control, right? Things need to happen, states to really fix it the right way. But they knew that by pulling the interest of the community they built focus on the communication, focus on the experience of the community, focus on how do we get the best result for the crappy situation they're in and get through it. I think those things are what you want with the community. And, if you focus on value, ways to quantify it, ways to build buy-in, and then, have a great trust and discussion, you can really explore the tough topics. So I think she's really set the stage for amazing things, and just great to hear her perspective.
Yeah. I mean, you brought up some great points, and that's, I think we both have similar organizations and we created it for a reason. I love that. What was that comment? The Blue Ocean Space?
Blue Ocean Space. There's a book called Blue Ocean Strategy. And
I'll have to read it because it's brilliant. I remember when I was going through my master's program, focused on city management, right? How to become a city manager, how to run cities. The mantra was, you have to do more with less. You have to do more with less. You have to do more with less, right? Because cities' revenue was getting limited. But citizen demands were growing. So how can you match the demand when your resources are going down? It's almost a no-win.
Right, but if you move into the blue ocean space, you can actually create together, and sometimes you can find the creative revenue sources, which also she started bringing up. Like, this blue ocean space allows innovation to occur, allows you to kind of tackle things in different ways.
Exactly. And so these organizations that enable cities to do more with less, because these not-for-profits, these public-private partnerships can actually help do things that the cities can't. And so I just love the model, as we've talked about, extensively on this show. I think it's just a way, don't be afraid to collaborate, get outside the box, find those external partners, whether it be these community organizations or even universities. We've talked a lot about universities here, but if you really want to drive innovation, look to collaborate, look to partner, especially at the regional scale, because as she mentioned, I think this is becoming natural across the country. Citizens don't care what city they're in. They just expect the service, right? They want it seamless. And so you really need this sort of...
But at the same time, she deeply understands who she's working with. And what did she say when she kicked it off? I had to check my notes here real quick. No city comes to her and says they have too much time and too much money. So she's realistic with that. And I also found the efficiency side of her approach. Blue Ocean Space allows you to collaborate in new ways and find new revenue sources. But if you're thinking efficiency and scale from the beginning, back to your point about these organizations, and as you innovate and create new, but you then build it in a sustainable way where it actually self-funds itself, it's a win-win. You're just taking funds in one area and then you're optimizing another way. So it doesn't actually impact the equation of the cities and the groups that she's working with. I think it's a great approach.
Yeah, maybe we found some new, some blue ocean space today with the partnership we just, I guess, announced.
Yeah, no doubt. Nice work.
it's amazing because, I mean, we, working with the Connected, which is the Greater Phoenix Smart Region, they're always wondering, where can we find additional revenue streams to help pay for these solutions that the citizens are demanding? Former Mayor Hiremath and Farhad, who runs the Pima Association of Governments and the Southern Arizona Smart Region, are constantly asking the same thing. And so here just became a perfect opportunity. Well, if Dallas has an open public call for these sorts of solutions, why not just work together, evaluate these solutions, and see if there's anything we might be able to do along these lines? And so...
Or contribute. I mean, through the Connective, we've been exploring some really interesting things with data, really interesting things with citizen engagement. Who knows what either ideas get generated from what she's doing or what we could contribute, or who knows? I love it. I think it's brilliant.
So, we'll have to definitely keep updating our audience here on how that partnership goes, but excited to move forward. So let's shift the cracks in the pavement. Anything exciting come across your desk?
Let me bring up the article. I love this one because it actually ties back to a former guest and a place. So the article is Atlanta suburb deploys new tech to tame traffic. So here's Brandon back with City of Peachtree Corners.
Love it.
Talk about cool. So they're literally going to deploy, it looks like, technology in partnership with Qualcomm and an infrastructure firm called Jacobs. I kind of look at it as new sensoring equipment to help kind of optimize safety and congestion in a very, isolated part. But if you remember back to our episode, they've really designed Peachtree Corners to be an innovation lab in and of itself. And I just find this fascinating.
Yeah. I mean, him and the city continue to push the envelope. of innovation. And it seems like every other week or I'm reading a new article about new technology that they're implementing to solve a challenge, right? Or to understand the community or the environment better. I mean, I'm just fascinated around Brandon, his leadership in the Peachtree Corner Curiosity Lab. I want to be surprised, talk about partnerships with Jen, you know, if you'll see a, you know, upcoming partnership between them and the work we're doing around the Institute for Automated Mobility and the Mobility Innovation Zone here in general. I just think, man, how do you continuously drive innovation, right? It's sometimes easy to get that first big win or maybe that first press release, but the way they continue to innovate and just add on incrementally to what they're doing.
Yeah, he did share there's lots coming. And it's exciting because you can layer stuff in, you can try new things because you don't have to recreate the wheel. Some of the stuff back to Jen, you know, if you do the blocking and tackling, you have the fiber laid, you have kind of the policy expectations, you know, the relationship with vendors, you can kind of plug them into a model. It gets easier and easier over time. I mean, if you read down the article, it even says, which I know is some things that we've been interested in. It says the new technology comes with this new technology deployment comes with Peachtree Corners looking to expand its autonomous shuttle route in the fall. So again, they just keep layering more and more and it kind of all figures its way. So I know we've been trying to figure out how to move people more effectively, cheaper, but it doesn't happen overnight.
No. Yeah. And I mean, you know me, I'm all about the collaboration and how might we build these partnerships. I mean, you mentioned they're looking at the autonomous shuttles. I'm reading it. They're, you know, how do they decrease pedestrian fatalities? A huge issue for us here.
Yeah.
How do they reduce congestion? A huge issue here as we continue to rapidly grow, right? And so this just naturally lends to me, like, how, if they're trying to solve the same challenges we're trying to solve, you know, why not partner here and explore ways to share data, share insights, share best practices? This is exciting. I'm going to follow up with Brandon right after this on this article. This is great.
Sounds good. Okay. Well, with that, that's a wrap. Thanks for joining us on the Urban Complex. See y'all.
Yep. See you next week. Go Suns.